Ourselves back on track. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from July 5th. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Second.
Move for approval.
Oh, we got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Item number 3 on the agenda is public comment. If you are here for public comment, please come forward. You have 2.5 minutes. Let me get my timer going.
You won't need a timer for me. Will Haney, 316 Malacourt. I'm here to talk about the attainable housing. I serve on, I think, 3, it might be 4 different either committees or commissions, if you count the one region roadmap, the Mayor's Commission on Affordable Housing and Homelessness, and now the new Charleston coalition, really, that is elected officials and the Metro Chamber and all that. And there's just 2 things I want to say about this as we go forward. One, as we all know, now more than ever, it is an economic development issue as one aspect of it. We will not get new major employers, or major employers might, you know, look less favorably about expanding in Mount Pleasant if their staff cannot afford to live in the town that we love so much. And second is a more personal thing and less of a policy level thing. For the last 4 elections, those of us that feel this way about our town, about preserving our quality of life and preserving what makes Mount Pleasant special, while we grow and change and limit growth and change the way, you know, buildings are designed and how tall they are to keep Mount Pleasant special, we're not doing this so none of our children can ever afford to live in this town. And we need attainable housing in Mount Pleasant, and it will not look like it does, I don't think, a one-size-fits-all approach in other municipalities. We don't have the big tracts of land. We don't have the semi-industrial areas that it's easier to put hundreds of units of residential structures there. It will look very different. It will look like less like a box from Amazon and more like something we get from IKEA, where we put it together and we got a little of this and a little of that. So please consider that as we look forward to all of this about attainable housing. We can get there from here, and we're just going to have to do it the Mount Pleasant way. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment?
Council Member Whitley, if I was there, I would stand up. Howard Chapman, 824 Natchez Circle. And my only public comment is, we received a very good response from our planning department regarding what we have done with the improvements suggested in terms of our group that lives outside of the town. So I would like for that to be put on our minutes as part of the record, so that there is something said about what we've done up to now on that.
Sorry, Howard, are you talking about the Settlement Communities Task Force?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. All right, any further public comment?
Good morning. George Freeman, 1450 Bowman Road. Last month, I spoke before the council about the recommendations of the task force. In hindsight, I was thinking, well, maybe I was ahead of the process and that it was the responsibility of the planning committee to make recommendations to the councils about the task force. If I'm correct on that, I'm here to make the request to the committee here today to make the request to move the recommendations that you agree with to council for improvement, because so far the work that the task force did, there's nothing being done with those recommendations. So we're wondering, we're just in limbo as to what's going on. Was all our effort worth for nothing if there's no recommendations to council to have them approve our recommendations? Thank you.
All right. Any further public comment? All right. Public comment is closed. Item number 4, The Planning Commission recommendations from July, there are no recommendations from Planning Commission. Item number 5 is discussion on minimum requirements for workforce housing terms of affordability. This is something that Ms. Hyatt asked to place on the agenda, and I'll turn it over to you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. As you said, we were asked to place this on the agenda, and so I believe really the concern was terms of affordability and our current requirements and what can be done to improve upon that. So I just have a few slides to kind of show you what we do currently have and where those requirements came from. So right now we have our workforce housing exemption grant. The term of affordability for that is a minimum of 10 years, and that the clock starts ticking after the issuance of a certificate of occupancy. These are some of our workforce housing projects that we have in the town. I wanted to kind of talk about those and what they put in place and the requirement for that. Carriage Hill Landing was one of the first one. That was a minimum 10-year deed restriction. That was really the only one we have that was single-family detached. 9 single-family detached residences out of a total of 30. That is an older development. The CO was issued in 2010, so those have expired. The Boulevard Workforce Housing, again, it was 10-year deed restricted. At the time that that was developed, it was developed under our Urban Corridor Overlay District. The Urban Corridor also had a minimum of 10-year, and so that's where that 10-year came from. Phase 1 has 18 workforce housing units. The CO was issued in 2013, so we have a couple more years on that. And then phase 2 has 6 units, and that CO was issued in 2020, so we have 10 more years, 8 more years for that. We have 6 Mile Marketplace. That was done through a South Carolina Community Loan Fund, and that requires a minimum of 10-year as well, and it requires 10% of your total units to be at a 10-year deed restriction. That was issued in 2018, and then of course our more recent one was Gregory Ferry Workforce Housing, and they chose to do the 75-year deed restriction. So obviously the key is to preserve long-term affordability. You know, if you, I did a lot of research when this came up and was looking at what some other areas have, and of course experts in the field recommend that any senior workforce housing is deed restricted in perpetuity. New projects using home funds are required 20 years. The low-income housing tax credit, that is a minimum of 20 years. So these federal requirements are minimums. They aren't maximums. They would like for you to view them as a starting place to be exceeded where possible, but these are federal requirements, and those are the minimums. I did look a little bit at some other areas. The standard does seem to be minimum of 30 years, which makes sense if you look at the life of a mortgage. And I did find Hilton Head had 30. The city of Charleston is a little bit different. They do a minimum of 30 years, but they have what they call first-year generation properties and second-year second-generation properties, and it has to do with when it was started or zoned for workforce housing. And so the cutoff date was 2017 and 2021. So it's 10 years or 25 years. But anything after that March 2021 date would be required to have a minimum of 30 years. So that's really kind of all I have for you, just to open it up for discussion. But that's kind of what I found in doing some research for that.
I just want to confirm, I was under the impression that under state law, we cannot require that all, I know in some states you can say, if you're going to build a new apartment complex, we require that 5% of the housing is reserved for affordable. Under state law, Mr. Paglini, we're not allowed to do that. Is that correct? Okay. So we cannot require that. The second question that I had was on these 10-year these places, if we go back a couple slides, is there any sort of monitoring or confirmation with the town that they're actually even offering these? Because I have never in my years living here seen any sort of workforce housing offered or advertised or spoken about or known about in any of these locations until, coming onto council and learning that they existed. Mm-hmm. is there any sort of enforcement to make sure that these are offered and they're actually utilized?
Yeah, so Carriage Hill Landing, for many years, we would have, if somebody wanted to sell their property, they had to go through us. If they were one of the nine properties, they had to come through the town, and we would look at inflation and different things, and we would help them work through what they could sell their property for. The Boulevard, they're required to provide us with reports every year. We are in constant contact with, it used to be Gray Star Management, I think they've been taken over, Real Page Development, but we are in contact with them, and we receive reports on them. In fact, they just called to ask us what their terms were, and Liz found the COs and was able to tell them when their end dates are. So we are in contact with them. When folks call us asking for resources for affordable housing, we provide these different, we provide the Boulevard, Six Mile Place, and then, of course, Gregory Ferry. So, yes, ma'am.
And then I guess, I don't know how my other council members feel about this, but 10 years seems to be a blip. Ms. Hyatt, what would you like to say? Go ahead.
I'm just nodding in agreement that it doesn't seem long enough.
I would.
I also would like to say that the 30-year mortgage seems to be the threshold across the country. And so that may be something we want to look at. I don't know if it would create a problem for us getting more workforce or attainable housing, but it seems like most other places are using the 30-year mortgage as the threshold.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Can we move back to the slide with the ordinance on it with that 10-year? So I guess my thought on this is that we have a moratorium on apartments, but there's an exception for workforce housing. And the same thing with the permit allocation. There's an exception for workforce housing. But despite that, and despite that, that sort of grant for people to build, we have only seen one project come through that actually builds affordable housing. And in talks with other developers that I've had where I've pointed out where they've asked, oh, well, can we build apartments? Can we add apartments to this PD? Or can we, you know, get some more density? I'm like, well, you can build workforce housing. And they've just sort of said back at me, it's not worth it to me. Like, it's not financially either. I mean, it is financially viable. We know it is, but it's not the 10x dollars that they're looking for in profits, as opposed to maybe a 5x or a 3x. So I think that the biggest problem in Mount Pleasant is that the dirt is so expensive that unless we have dirt that is less expensive, there's not a lot of juice for the squeeze in pouring money into public money into workforce housing. If the land itself is $600,000 and it's $300,000 to build, we're talking, you know, $1 million, and then I guess where's the money coming from? And so, but we know that it's possible to do this in a private setting and still be profitable and still be affordable. Maybe not affordable to everyone, but affordable for Mount Pleasant. I mean, I think Gregory Ferry's, their prices for their townhomes are 50% of what the median price is, or no, even less than that, of like a townhome in Mount Pleasant. So it may not be affordable to everyone, but could be affordable for people who, you know, hit that range that we require, the median family income. I think that there's no magic bullet. There's no magic solution to this problem. This is something that people struggle with all over the country, that cities are struggling with is and towns are struggling with affordable housing and where that cost should lie and the best way to do it. And I think that the solution for Mount Pleasant is not high density 80-foot apartment complexes. I don't think that that's why people choose to live in Mount Pleasant. And I don't think that bringing people into the community that way with the crowding of our schools, they're bringing, you know, trailers to Lucy Beckham already. I think we have to be more creative with the solution. And I think it also needs to be a regional solution, not just a Mount Pleasant solution. And I think working with the other municipalities on a Charleston County or Tri-County area solution, as the mayor was saying, may afford some relief to our housing issues. Ms. Hyatt?
I guess I'm a little unfamiliar with, if we can't require it, Is that what you were saying? A certain percentage? How did we get what we have? That was just,
no,
they volunteered, or we gave some incentive?
I think what Ms. Whitley was referring to was requiring, if somebody comes to us and they want to do a multifamily development, we can't, according to what Mr. Pagliarini is saying, we can't require them to do, say, 20 or 30% workforce housing. We can require a minimum term of affordability. So whatever, you know, if it's 20, if it's 30 years, what have you, that's certainly something. And I know Gregory Ferry, Mr. Berry did that out of his own, you know, that was their decision that worked for them. I have talked to them about another proposed workforce housing development, and they have said that they would do 75 again. So that is their number, but that's because they chose to.
And Ms. Reed, oh, sorry. I was just going to clarify, when you say we can require up to 30 years, or we could require 30 years of affordability, that's for workforce housing. That's not just
right.
for general, that's just not, someone's got a PD, they come in, they want to put
right.
in 100.
No.
We can't require that on that, but for workforce housing, we can place requirements.
We can deed restrict it for more than 10 years if that's the desire of committee and council. Yes.
So with your list of those mm-hmm. projects that had affordable mm-hmm. housing, how did we get those? They just volunteered, we're just going to put 9, or they didn't, or what
no.
incentive did they have for doing what they did? With
those
Boulevard
were the
or
requirements.
Carriage Hill?
Yeah, so Carriage Hill was a single family workforce housing PD. Our workforce housing PD had the requirement. You had to have a certain percent, 10% basically, had to be workforce housing. If you did
no, but
that
it was,
as a planned development,
but
you
that
chose
was a PD.
You chose to do
yeah.
that. Yeah, that's correct.
Yes, it's a PD.
The Boulevard. They did it because they that was when the urban corridor, we had our bonus densities.
Mm-hmm.
So you could get extra density if you provided workforce housing.
So that was the
yeah, correct.
Mm-hmm. And my other question is, with the comp plan mm-hmm. and residential development, what I mean, we already have numbers factored in for affordable housing. Like with redevelopment, a certain percentage can mm-hmm. be residential, and then a certain percentage of that has to be affordable. What are those
right.
numbers?
I think in the hubs, the recommendation is that for the community scale hubs, 20,000 square feet, I think, is the housing, and then 30% of that is affordable. It has to be affordable. And then for the redevelopment centers, you're allowed to have up to 20, or it's, I think it's one developable unit per acre. And then we require whatever that amount is, 30%. Again, this is comp plan, so it's recommendation. It recommends that 30% of that be affordable housing. So, yeah, in the redevelopment centers and our community scale hubs, the comprehensive plan does make those recommendations that if you are going to have housing, you need to do affordable housing.
Now, is that anything that's going to be put in writing as we rewrite
we're working
our zoning
on that now
and try to match our comp plan?
Yes, ma'am. And that's what we've been working with David and legal. In fact, we have a meeting between our consultants, who are attorneys, and our corporation counsel to talk about how we're gonna do that, and if we can, and you know, because it is a recommendation in the comp plan. But
mm-hmm.
if we're able to do that legally, well, so those are some things that we're working on now.
Well, I think based on what Mr. Pagliarini said, I think it's a guideline for the mm-hmm. comp plan. It's an ideal that we would like to achieve, but I think that state law restricts us from requiring it. We cannot just put in our ordinance and say from here on out anything built has to put in 20% or 30% affordable housing. I think we have to create unfortunately, I think we have to create an incentive structure that's going to lean towards wanting to adopt that 20 to 30%, and the question then becomes is what sort of sweeteners do we need to throw in order to make it viable for developers to do these affordable housing projects? And as I said before, given what we have now, we may need to rethink that, because it's not resulting. The results are not coming in the pace that we would hope, I would think.
Question?
Yes, Chloe.
So I thought we were talking about just what exactly does affordable mean, and how long can we extend these periods, right, at this time? Are we just talking about other stuff or as well? Because, I mean, are we going to actually, we can take action on this? Like, are we going to extend the amount of time? Because I'd be super interested in 75 or forever. You know.
Yeah, I think that for today's, it's just discussion as far as, I don't think it's just discussion and possible action, but I think, you know, we could explore the issue that I have, and I think it's potentially interesting to raise it to 30 minimum and match our sister municipalities. I think we could explore that and maybe have staff come back to us with something like that and what that ordinance would look like. I feel like if we're already not getting affordable housing with the existing one, and to make it more restricted, I think it's going to deter even more people. But I do think 10 years is way too low of a number of years. So maybe we make it 30, but then also rethink how do we structure this to actually incentivize developers to jump in and say, yes, I want to build workforce housing.
But how would that affect a developer's wanting? Because they're going to sell it for what they're going to sell it for.
Because if they only have to have 10 years, so for example, the Boulevard with this 18 workforce housing, it's over in 2023.
Right.
So to them, it was worth it. They got that bonus density. They put in those extra units, and those units become gravy to them in 10 years. If you say, okay, well, now those units are stuck for 30 years, many people's economic horizon isn't as long as 30 years. So they're not willing to think that long term. They want the money to come in sooner rather than later. So by extending the requirement to 30 years, I think people that might have been inclined to say, well, for 10 years, I'll throw in some affordable housing. I'll do affordable for 10 years, and then I get to make, you know, double. And I think that making it 30 years would make it less valuable to a developer.
Even though they're selling it to a private person.
But they wouldn't, you know. Well, these are apartments I'm talking about, yeah. And
those are apartments, not condos.
Yeah.
And what makes it affordable exactly? Can you remind me? I think I've asked you that before.
Well, HUD releases their numbers every year. And so I know, for instance, the Boulevard, they check in with us. And so we update them on what the HUD numbers were based on the area median income and all that. And so it could be adjusted, yearly. It may not. But it always falls within HUD guidelines for affordability.
So if something would sell for $500,000, then somebody could buy it for, what, $250,000, and that's affordable? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's how Carriage Hill Landing operated for a while, because those were fee simple, single-family detached. Everything we have right now, other than Gregory Ferry, is their apartments, their rentals.
Okay.
And so we provide them with HUD's rental guidelines every year when those come out.
All right, that makes sense. I guess mm-hmm. I was thinking more condos, not apartments.
Yeah.
Okay. And you guys, when you think about workforce, you think apartments first?
It's both. It's got to be both.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
All right. Ms. Reed, if you could have staff take a look, if the rest of committee is on board with this, take a look at that workforce housing and look into changing that 10-year mm-hmm. to 30.
Sure.
And then if there's any other... I mean, I guess the only incentive that I can think of is density and height, right? And I don't know if there's any other incentives like impact fees or things like that can be thrown in there or put in to like encourage developers to go in the direction of workforce housing, or just at least maybe not put anything in, but just give us kind of options of what that could look like.
Sure. And just to clarify, the grant does provide for relief from through the building permit process for impact fees.
Okay.
So that is one thing available. But yeah, we'll look at some other incentives and see if we can come back with that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Do we have anything else on item number 5? All right, moving on to item number 6, comprehensive plan implementation.
And we promised an update last month, so here we are. If you'll recall, in the adopted comp plan under our district plans, it divided the town up into 8 sub areas, and that was based geographically, traffic patterns, and such. But one of the things that the comp plan recommended was that we look at community character and issues that are most keenly affected at this local level. And so, what we wanted to do moving forward was, it's part of the comp plan implementation. As well as part of our public outreach, livability, all of those things, we have a series of public input meetings coming up. They'll begin in the fall of 2022, and we'll wrap it up in spring 23. It is based on those eight districts, although we've combined the Carolina Park, 10 Mile, and the rural area. But this is going to be an all-hands-on deck where we have folks from every department at these meetings. And we're going to try to address at those district levels. So we're going to get specific depending on where the meeting is for that month. And we're going to talk about livability. We're going to talk about the character areas that were defined and how those can be improved upon. We're going to talk about housing affordability, trees, open space, recreation, cultural and historical assets, hazard mitigation, transportation. We're going to dive into Mount Pleasant Way and how it affects those individual districts. And then public safety and then business and economic development. As I said, we will have staff from each department will be there. This will include, so it's going to be, it's there, we've got a lot of goals in this, but what we want to do is, number one, we want to talk about some of the initiatives that we've been working on based on the previous comp plan. So what came out of the comprehensive plan? What did it recommend for your district? Are these still relevant? Are they still applicable? What are some of the initiatives we've done since then, capital improvement projects that are that we are undertaking in your individual district? And then it's also going to be an informational and educational thing, just having that communication of things that are going on in the town and what can we do to improve the communication. We'll have public feedback opportunities related to each of those topics designed to inform various town initiatives. And then based on this, we want to refine the comp plan goals and priorities for each district and then set the stage for upcoming planning efforts. We will provide updates to council, and then there will be a final report at the end of all this. And so not only is this an implementation tool from the comp plan, but every year or every 5 years, you have to do an update to your comp plan. And I know it's hard to believe, but that's going to be coming up. So by the time we wrap up the spring 2023 meetings, we're going to use all of this information we've gathered to inform then our five-year update. So we've got several purposes here. And these are the meetings. Liz has been working very hard on this. And we have all these scheduled. I think the only one tentative is the one for January number 4. But September 15th is going to be our first meeting. It will be here for the Johnny Dodds District at Town Hall. We're going to do this monthly, but we'll take December off and then come back in January where we'll hit 17 North, February 9th, Coleman District, March, and then wrap up April 13th with the Town Center District. These are all going to be in-person meetings, but we will have an online component to facilitate participation by those that cannot not attend, and we're looking forward to it. As I said, Liz and the livability team, she's been working very hard with representatives from every department in the town. So this is going to be a huge endeavor, but we're excited about it. And we'll provide you updates as before each meeting and make sure you're well informed.
Thank you. So, do we have any comments from committee?
Yes.
You had a map of the districts, right? Drawn out. Can I look at that?
Yes,
again?
Ma'am. So there it is. And as I said, we combined Caroline Park, 10 Mile, and rural area. So instead of, we have eight districts, but we're having seven public meetings.
Okay.
And that last meeting to meet those last two districts would be at the Wando Library out by the high school. So.
Thank you so much for all your work on this and for the department's work on this. Do we have any other comments from committee on item number 6?
Yes, Pam. One of the questions I have is at these public meetings, certain things that are in the referendum were in the comp plan. Will that be presented? I know we can't spend any money or staff time on it, but they are, in fact, part of the comp plan. So will you be showing, for example, the fact that Mount Pleasant Way, which was a big deal in the comp plan, is part of this referendum to help get some of it done?
No, sir. This is Eric, Mr. Chapman. if the element is included in the comprehensive plan and it comes up at a meeting, we will show it. But we're not allowed, as you know, to make any connection or indication that such a project is part of the referendum.
Okay, I understand that. The only thing is that in the comp plan, you've got to show how you, in fact, expect to pay for items. Do you not?
Well, our capital improvement program shows that. And for the, just for example, with the project that you're mentioning, we have a number of different methods to try to achieve funding for that project. Our own in-house money and grant funding and others.
But from the duration, it takes a lot longer than if we pass the referendum. Is that not correct? That's a way to fund.
I understand what you're saying, sir, but staff is not going to be able to be at one of these meetings and mention that there's a referendum that is upcoming that could be a way to expedite a project. We can't be, and you know this very well, the case law is quite clear. Anyone employed by the town is not allowed to either directly or indirectly support or connect anything to an upcoming referendum.
Okay. I just...
Now, elected officials can do that. There's no prohibition against that.
No, but, I know that. So if an elected official was at the meeting, could they say? And hopefully David's sitting there listening.
Well, the answer is yes. You just couldn't... There couldn't be a... what an elected official says is not restricted. Now, the town as an organization cannot print, for example, a document or any kind of other material that could be used by that elected official to promote the referendum.
No, I understand, and that makes sense. All I'm saying is we're going out and holding these public meetings about the comp plan and how it's going. So I'm just trying to think of a way to get that word out.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Does anyone else from the committee have anything on item number 6? All right, if not, then the next item on the agenda is to adjourn. I declare this meeting adjourned.